Hello, everyone. Welcome to Ubi Est Mia. My name is Brandon Weatherby. This episode is with former Chicagoan, current Los Angeles resident, Joe McAdam. Joe McAdam is a very, very funny human being, and we talk about how funny he is. I want to make it very clear that I like Joe McAdam, and some of the mean things that I said were in jest, and he's a very funny man who I encourage you to check out online. There are lots of links included in this podcast description. Before we begin, I just want everyone to know that I will be back in Chicago on Thursday, May 26th, to host You, Me, Them, Everybody live at the Hungry Brain in Chicago, Illinois. You, Me, Them, Everybody is the other talk show podcast that I host. On this episode, it'll be at the Hungry Brain, 2319 West Belmont. My co-host for that show is Esmeralda Leone, who you might hear on this very radio station every Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. Without further ado, here's Joe McAdam.
Do you hear all the cars on my end?
I do not hear any of the cars on your end.
Oh, this is great. That's perfect. There's I'm walking down Santa Monica Boulevard, and there's just a shitload of cars.
Why are you walking down Santa Monica Boulevard?
Yeah, it's a little exercise.
You're walking down Santa Monica Boulevard at 9:18 a.m. for a little exercise.
You know, get out of the house and stretch the bones, you know.
Are you trying to be a stereotype of a struggling Chicago comic? In Los Angeles.
Yeah. No, that's the deal. I'm wearing a tank top, too. It's all there.
Are you really wearing a tank top?
100%. Every last detail. I did this right. We're a method actor.
All right. So you quit your job this week.
Yeah, I just quit my job. It's over.
What was your job?
It was working for a startup app thing. I don't know how much I'm allowed to say. They made me sign one of those things, non-disclosures.
It sounds exciting.
It is so noisy on the whole Santa Monica Boulevard here.
Why did you knew we were doing this. Why did you take a walk?
It's okay, here's why. It's the closest street to my house, and it's on the way. I'm headed right now to the Hollywood Forever Cemetery, which I figured would be the quietest place.
Are you okay? Stop. Are you doing this as a bit because you knew we were doing this, or is this like part of your daily routine?
It's not a bit. I'm just going to the cemetery because it's going to be the quietest place near my house. I'm thinking, like, what's quiet? And now I'm just going to be, there's people having a funeral.
What color is your tank top?
It's white and it's a beer logo on it. Probably the least appropriate for a funeral. It's not funeral day.
Oh, God. All right. We've been doing this show for about a half a year now, and I've been doing the other talk show for over six, seven, I don't know. Bush was in office when we started. You make me
Rest
laugh harder. What's up?
Rest in peace, George W. Bush.
You make me laugh harder than any other comic that's ever been on the show.
Oh, come on.
Well, I don't know if I'm laughing at you or with you.
You know, we're just laughing. I think that's good enough.
All right, so a lot of people in Chicago know you from what you did with the Late Live Show and what you did with a bunch of different, in terms of stand-up. Oh, that's a horrible phrase. What you did in a bunch of terms of stand-up. No, you threw stand-up. Yeah. And everyone that seems to know you seems to really like you and gravitate towards you because you're like a relatively stable man with a wife that seems to try really hard.
Yeah, you know, it's hard having a wife and doing comedy, but, you know, if your wife is pretty chill, it's great.
How chill is your wife on a scale of 1 to 10?
Oh, I mean, like, the chillest person I think I've ever met. Basically, we've moved a couple times for whatever I wanted to do. It has shown really no signs of payoff. And she's like, yeah, okay, cool. We'll do that. So she loves it. She's in on this, you know. But I don't make money, you know. So that's a pretty chill lady right there.
Now, a lot of your friends do make money doing this.
Yeah, right?
What do you think is the difference between your friends that are, have successful and healthy careers and yourself?
That's a great question. I would say, do you hear that? There are peacocks in this cemetery screaming at me. I think that my friends that are, have more success probably have more marketable skills than I do. I think that would probably be the answer. The things that I want to make, as I'm going on, I'm realizing it's really nobody else likes this. Like 5-6 people like it. And that's good for me. It makes me happy. But that's not like you're going to be on television.
What do you want to happen?
Well, I mean, probably to be on TV would be pretty cool. I don't know. I would like to have a job, but really what I want, what I would truly want, I just want like enough money to not have to work a desk job or, you know, deliver food or something. That's it. I don't need to be, I don't really need to be on television.
As an unemployed man in his 30s wearing a tank top and currently walking through the cemetery without a job or future prospects, what's your next move?
Yeah. Well, I'm probably going to hit up Joey Ramone's grave is here. I'm going to hit that up, I think. I don't know. I got irons in the fire, baby. I'm trying to do stuff. I got I don't know. I'm trying to make a pilot right now. I've been working with my friends. I made one a couple years ago for like just independently and put it in the New York TV festival, and then it did well, but then not a whole lot came out of it. Like I don't have a job because of it, so I'm going to try that again. I don't know. Maybe that's stupid.
Matt, let me interrupt here. You won that festival.
The comedy division, whatever. Yeah, best comedy.
So the fact that you won a festival and then nothing came of it has got to be really disheartening.
Well, it's not nothing. I mean, I don't know. It helps people. It's one of those things I feel like where just doing one thing doesn't mean anything, you know? Like, people would be like, oh, we took meetings for it and stuff like that. And then we ended up doing a web series for IFC based on that. And then, but then it's like, okay, cool. And they're not, people are knocking down our door. You know what I mean? So it's just, hey, keep doing more stuff. And then eventually one of these things will stick forever and I'll be a millionaire.
The confidence in your voice is just astounding.
A millionaire.
I really, really enjoyed that web series. I don't want to give away the joke, but is the one with the button the last episode? It involves
wait,
a coat and a button.
Oh, that one. Oh, I think we probably put that one at the end.
Okay.
But yeah, I that one's not one you want to open with.
If you've listened to this show and have liked anything I've said, I would start with that episode because that was laughed so hard I cried, and I showed it to everyone else in the office, and we also really hurt our insides with your joy that you brought us. So you're really, really great, and what you do is so not marketable.
I know, right? I mean, what can you do? But I'm not going to – I don't know. I have a lot of – I see so much comedy all the time, and I'm just like, oh, yeah, I can definitely tell that that's going to be on TV, and this will not.
Yeah, but what you do?
I'm developing an eye for this.
Did you ever think about becoming a manager?
It doesn't sound good.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, I'll do it. Fine.
One of your most recent videos is you do your Google. I want people to watch all of these bits. They're all on YouTube or something that you could stream online. Because I want it to be clear that I'm not just calling a random man and making fun of him. I genuinely like what he does.
Yeah, no, put some links in this, you know. Put a link in this thing.
I'm going to put a lot of links in here because you're most... I think it was at Nerd Melt. I don't... Whatever. It was at one of those comedy clubs that seat 30 people, but it's are considered a big deal across the United States. And you had a googly eyes bit. And on paper, this does not sound funny at all. But in reality, one of the funniest things I've seen. It was 2016, right? It was pretty recent.
I think that I did that at the very end of last year. I think it was the end of 2015.
Do you think that maybe by not having to correct details like that didn't need correcting is why you don't have a full-time job in Los Angeles?
Hey, no, I do know. It was during the World Series. It was right before the World Series.
God damn it.
It was right when the Cubs got swept by the Mets. And I remember cutting out part of my set where, you know, Joe Kilgallen, host of, he does the Comedians You Should Know show out here, and friend of everyone. He's a great guy. He's a big Cubs fan, and I'm a Royals fan. And so the first chunk of my set that night was just making fun of the Cubs because I don't care about the Cubs at all, and everyone else does. Again, bad, you know, those choices that lead to, like, hey, why are you making fun of the Cubs? People like them. But I made some jokes about the Cubs. So I remember that set, and so it was definitely during, like, right before the World Series.
Can we talk a little seriously for a minute, or is that just stupid?
No, we can 100% talk seriously. I'm good at that, too.
You met your wife in high school or college?
High school.
Do you think you would be at the place you're at without her, or do you think you'd be even doing comedy?
Man, I don't know. I think I might be, I'd probably have, like, that level of alcoholism where you just aren't functional and you don't go anywhere. You know, like, because starting doing comedy in Chicago, I definitely would have probably, well, okay, I think I would have done that. I would have moved, I'm from Kansas City, and so I would have made that move to Chicago to try comedy because that's always been what I wanted anyway. But without her around, I think I would have been just sucked into a black hole of, like, deadbeat comics drinking themselves to death. So having a wife really helped.
Was she the one that said, hey, it's time to move to Los Angeles?
No, that was me. And I said L.A. or New York. I would be fine doing either, and it would just kind of – I'd have to adapt to either one, you know. Like, so I'm out here. She didn't want to go to New York at all. She's like, it's cold and grimy. And I was like, yeah, it is. So let's go to L.A. But here, it's like I don't do nearly as much stand-up as I used to. But in New York, I would certainly be going out way, way more for stand-up. But I'm just doing other stuff, you know.
Are you finding as much joy in doing the other stuff, like the sketches and like the video stuff?
It's totally different in the fact that, like, I really miss the immediate satisfaction of just doing a set. That's just not happening nearly as much. And stand-up audiences aren't the same out here, you know? It's a real, like, seen it all, what's your famous name kind of deal, where that totally doesn't exist in Chicago.
How often do you think about moving back to Chicago or Kansas City?
Chicago, never. I don't think I could move back to Chicago, as much as I love it. I could move back to Kansas City, but only because my parents are getting old, you know? But, yeah, I don't want to. But it's one of those, well, if I need to, I can kind of deals. But I think I'd just like to stay in Los Angeles. Or if I got work, I'd go to New York. But I don't think I'd be anywhere else. Oh, you know what? I've been thinking about Texas.
I can't tell.
Wouldn't Texas be cool? No, I have been. I think Texas would be kind of cool.
Have you been to Texas?
Yeah. I had a buddy that went to college there, and I visited. And it just seems like, boy, it's got its own attitude down there, doesn't it?
You know, I was in Omaha last year and had a blast. I do Omaha over Texas.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I've been to Omaha. I feel like maybe, but I can't recall.
I think you'd really like Omaha, especially because it's like sort of Kansas City-ish in terms of like culturally hip, but not the city ever.
Sure. I mean, Kansas City's not like super hip. You know, I don't know what you've heard.
When you were in Chicago, how long did it take you to figure out who your friends were in the comedy scene?
Pretty soon. I think, you know, you just make a couple friends right out of the gate because the first move you make is you go to an open mic and you hate everyone. And then there's one person who does like a totally weird, bizarre joke. And you're like, oh, yeah, okay, I'll talk to this guy.
Do you remember who that
person
is?
And then that turns out to be your friend there. And then, you know, slowly just kind of builds, and then you're friends with everybody.
Do you remember that first weirdo that you gravitated towards?
100%. I remember I was at the now defunct Edge Comedy Club open mic, and it's called, it's, you know, comedy club, but it's not. It's just a, it feels like a church basement. And it was, yeah, it was this guy AJ Conover was the first dude I met at an open mic. He would do this bit where he would put on a fake mustache and have a box of like Little Debbie's zebra cakes, and he would run up on stage and just whip zebra cakes out and into the audience and just scream about, "We got zebra cakes!" and like just start screaming about it, and then he would run off and then come back without the mustache on, like, "Hey, did you guys see some zebra cake guy?" And I was like, "Okay, that guy's my friend." I was like, "It's the dumbest kid at an open mic where I don't know what you're, I don't know what the end game of doing that at an open mic is." I was like, "All right, this guy's funny." He's probably the first person I met, and he doesn't do. He barely did stand up after that. It was clearly not in the correct form for what he wanted to do. But one of the funniest dudes.
How did you get involved with Joe and CJ with the Late Live Show? Because our show started at roughly the same time. I started in a dive bar, and you started at the most prestigious comedy club in the country.
Well, we started at Second City, and they have three theaters there: the main stage, the second stage, and then there's like a student stage, and then they made a fourth one that no one ever went to, and we were in the fourth. Like 20 person seat, you know, stage.
No, stop. It was not 20 people.
Maybe 40.
Yeah, you said at least 40, maybe even 60.
Maybe 60. All right.
Don't sell yourself short. I went to the first show you guys ever did. It was packed. You could, like, there was at least 60 people there, and I think you squeezed people in because it was the first show. You guys always drew well. Don't just shit all over yourself. You'd had an amazing run there.
All right, it was pretty good, wasn't it? You got me. It was great.
But how did you meet CJ and Joe?
Through stand-up. And I'm trying to think if there was... Because I was basically like the guy I mentioned, AJ Conover. We were trying to put together like a two-person sketch thing. We were trying to film some sketches and stuff like that. And so I think, you know, Joe and Joe Quazala and CJ Toledano and Andrew Smirker kind of came up with the idea for the show. And then they just asked both AJ and I to do it because they're like, "Oh, these guys are, you know, will provide a weird voice that they kind of are developing together." And so, you know, I knew those guys through stand up anyway, but not like super tight until we started doing the show.
You start doing the show. CJ has to leave because he gets an internship at Conan after the first season, and then you become the co-host, and then the show lasts for how many more years?
Four, maybe, I think, roughly.
One of the main reasons the show ended is because Joe and yourself moved to Los Angeles. CJ ended up going from that Conan internship to working for Fallon in New York and then back to L.A. So by the end of the run, no one lived in Chicago. That's why it ended.
Yeah, by the end, we were running out of people that were actually still there. So, yeah, Joe and I and Dan Ronan and Chris Stevens and Andrew Smirker, so many people went to L.A. And so we tried doing it out in L.A. too, but it didn't. That, you know what? Turns out that they've got, like, Conan and Jimmy Kimmel out there. They don't need us.
The show sort of exists in the other show that you do, which is the Wheel Show.
Yeah, we had to start the Wheel Show because we just couldn't do the Late Live Show anymore. Nobody cared, and we put it up at IO West, which is, you know, just the IO theater, but out in LA. And we were having so much fun at the IO in Chicago, but the one out here is like, it's like on Hollywood Boulevard, the walk-in audience is just like, God, these people are like aliens, you know what I mean? And there's a nightclub right next door, which would just pound bass music through the walls. Like, you couldn't have a silent moment, like a pause or anything on the show. It'd be like you'd set up a joke and have a little bit of a a little wait time, and then it just like blast you with dance music bass through the walls. You couldn't do a show properly in there. So it was kind of a bummer, but we're like, all right, we got to move, and we got to ditch the show, ditch the show idea, because nobody wants to see that out here.
So the wheel, why do people want to see the wheel show over the late live show?
Man, it's so silly. We've inside our group, we've talked about it so much where it's just like, we just want to do like a sketch comedy show. And I think we'd be really good at it. And then everyone's like, well, what's the gimmick? And every single place you go, it has to have some kind of fucking goofy gimmick to do a show. And so we're like, I don't know. How about you spin a wheel? And so there's like sketches written on the wheel, and then we just land on one, and then we do those.
And you have celebrity guests every episode.
Yeah, we've had some pretty fun guests. Lisa Loeb, that was a cool one. I thought that was pretty cool.
Could I tell you? I'm going to tell you regardless because I'm talking into a microphone. I had the dumbest thought last night about Lisa Loeb. That if Stay was written in 2016, it would be about a couple and one person in the couple like love the TED podcast and the other person in the couple like hated the TED Talk podcast.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it would be. Because in the McAdam household, I mean there are party lines about the TED Talks.
Another reason why I wanted to mention that is because you and current Chicago and Nicholas Rowley, big old Nicky R, had an amazing...
Big Nicky R, Nick Rowley, yeah.
You had the only podcast that I listened to the entire catalog without being on the show or the show like existing on NPR first.
Yeah, it was just like a total screw around show. It was so much fun. That was a blast. I miss doing that for sure.
Stop. What was the name of the show? And please explain the show to the listener at home.
It was called Revolutions Per Minute. It was just about music and just kind of chit-chat. It's like a chit-chat show about music. But we would just like sit around at Nick's apartment and just drink beer all night and just make a list of songs that fit into a category for each episode. Like, one episode is about like fat guys in rock and roll, or you know whatever we do like holiday themed ones where we, you know, play holiday music. I don't know, stuff like that. But there's just like we were just doing this anyway, and then we were like, hey, let's record this because Nick was my neighbor, lived down the block, and we would just drink beer all night and talk about music. And like, all right, this is fun. This is fun enough for a show.
Link to the catalog in the podcast description, but the episodes that I enjoy the most, besides the last ones, because I think those are like reunion episodes or something like that, were When Your Wives Were On. I really enjoyed that episode, and I really enjoyed the episode that you and Joe Quazzala did about classic rock.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, the wives one was super fun because Nick and I are two of the only people that, you know, I hang out with a ton that are just married dudes trying to do comedy, and we don't like my wife is so, you know, like we're not those guys.
If you've never seen Big Nicky R on stage, he mostly talks about how much he likes to have intercourse with his wife.
Yeah, no, he is, I would say, perhaps Chicago's horniest stand up comic.
Has anyone ever called him Big Nicky R before?
I mean, you know, in the sailor days, sure, who knows? But I don't know if anyone's calling him Big Nicky R anymore.
Well, I think it's coming back. It's 2016. It's time for a change. Big Nicky R all the way.
Hell yeah.
I think by doing this show with me and by just and knowing you and watching you, this sounds like I'm a real creep and appreciating what you do. I think the reason why I gravitate towards you and your comedy and the non-comedy stuff is because in an ideal world, you would be my television executive. You would be my program director because you create the kind of art that I wish I didn't have to search out for
art.
Exactly. Your willingness to say fart over art is brilliant. Your willingness to make a Godzilla remix project over anything is more important than any sincere art. That being said, in Revolutions Permitted, you guys were able to genuinely appreciate things for what they are. but never take anything too seriously, because at the end of the day, like, who gives a shit?
Oh, well, yeah, I think that's good, right? I mean, I appreciate it. I'm just trying to, you know, I like comedy first and foremost, you know what I mean? Like, I was an obsessive kid about it, and we'd just be like, oh, I'm watching old VHS tapes of, like, the state special or whatever, you know, and just was a total obsessive nerd about comedy. So, I don't know, I'd like to think that I have good taste about it, but again, like, good taste doesn't really mean anything outside of, like, you know, impressing a couple people.
your taste is interesting, because I don't know if there's going to be this, like, the next generation, whatever, is going to have that type of taste, because you and I were some of the last crop of, we could find that state special, or we could find that Nirvana bootleg, or we could find this weird film that only existed in Europe, so you had to get a bootleg VHS. But because of that, we would rewatch those things over and over and over again, where now, this morning I was watching, like, RuPaul student films from, like, 1988, where they talk about how hard it is to be a go-go dancer. Like, I couldn't access that. And if I could access it, I would watch it religiously, and it would become part of the catalog. Where now I'm able to access everything. So I wonder if your comedy, like, the way you form that, is ever going to happen again.
Well, I want to have a conversation with you about it, but, like, off the podcast, because I've got this fun idea.
Sounds great. Let's get back to the Chicago idea behind this whole thing. I'm a competitive person, and I think Joe Kilgallen, I think, is another competitive person. He's been on the show before, and we're both sort of in the comedy world. He's really into it. I'm sort of into it. You're one of the few people, when I saw Successes, and I wasn't really your friend yet, or even an acquaintance, I was not jealous, because I knew you were better than me.
Better than you?
Oh, clearly, yes. You are a better performer and entertainer. You're a more likable man. I know exactly where I stand. Like, I'm the guy that brought the ball to the playground. That's why I get to play, but I'll take the ball home. You know what I mean? I'm not the guy with the skill that anyone's drafting first.
Hey, don't talk yourself down. It's a very good ball. It's a great ball. I've been talking to the gang. We all love it.
But there's a lot of other people, though, that are mutual friends, mutual acquaintances, and they would just be like, they didn't deserve that. But I didn't get anything of that from you. And I wonder, clearly this is a flaw completely on my end. But I think that you have this weird, like, Midwestern niceness that a lot of people from Chicago think they have but don't. But because you're not from Chicago but grew up in that scene, you have.
I mean, I think there's – I'd like to think I'm nice. Right? But that's what everybody says. So that means a whole hell of a lot when everyone says that. But I don't know. I can get petty and small and jealous. That happens. I try not to let it out.
Do you let it out to your wife, or do you let it out to fellow comics? Who knows when you're petty and small and jealous?
Oh, man. I mean, comics shit-talking is just the most fun thing in the world to do. That's such a blast. I do with other comics all the time. It's great. I love finding a comic that loves to just trash someone else. That's fun. And no one, you know what I mean? It's like, no one's hurt. You just got to go hang out with somebody and you're like, hey, can you believe that fucking idiot got that, blah, blah, blah. That's great. It's fun. I think that's a healthy outlet.
But you seem to do it not with people that are peers. You seem to, like, punch up.
How did the president get elected? Have you seen his TV5? Are you fucking kidding me? I punch up, you know? I'm not going to take down the little guy.
What do you hope happens right now, like, this week for you? Because this can't be fun for you to go from, like... You're unemployed right now, and I'm assuming you don't have unemployment.
No, I voluntarily ended my my job, so I don't get unemployment. But I had to do it. You know what I mean? Where it's just like, if I don't, I'm getting up there. I'm almost 32. You know, I'm not going to be on any of those funniest teenager lists anymore. I gotta make something happen, and I needed to make sure that I didn't have a job standing in my way of doing it, because it was honestly a time drain and an energy drain to to have it. So I just needed to get rid of it.
Are you worried about rent?
So this is it. This is the final push. And then in 1 year, I will... I'm shooting my corpse into space. So long, Los Angeles. I'm giving myself a hard out here.
Once again, for the listener at home, Joe, where are you calling from?
I'm in Hollywood Forever Cemetery in Los Angeles, California. And hey, can I do a just kind of a public service announcement on the show?
Yes.
I found a driver's license for a Holly Martin from San Diego. If she's listening, Joe McAdam has your driver's license. I can meet you halfway. We can meet up in Carlsbad. But I got the license for you. Holly Martin.
If you would like more information about Joe McAdam, go to joemcadam.com. The link is in the podcast description. Once again, I like him very, very much. If you would like more information about this show, go to UbiEstMiaPod on Twitter or just type in UbiEstMia in the Facebook little tab and you'll find us. We're there. Once again, we'll be at the Hungry Brain. Well, I will be at the Hungry Brain in Chicago, Illinois on Thursday, May 26th, hosting You, Me, Them, Everybody Live. Go to youmethemeverybody.com for more information. Our theme songs are by Daniel Knox, and our art is by Dmitry Samarov. Thanks for listening, and have a wonderful night.